Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 36 of the Theatrical Mustang podcast. I'm your host, Katie Woodzik. This episode is an interview with playwright and actor Jeannie Sakata. It's guest hosted by Darcy Noonan. Darcy saw Jeannie's play, Hold These Truths, at ACT Theater, and she was so moved by it that I thought it would be an awesome opportunity to get these two women in the same room talking about this dynamic play that's still running at ACT, runs through August 16th. Jeannie also has a film called Advantageous that she did voiceover work for that's premiering at the Northwest Film Forum on August 14th. There's info and links to both of these events in the episode description. And so enjoy episode 36 with Jeannie Sakata, guest hosted by Darcy Noonan.
So I'm guest hosting for Katie Woodzik. This is her Theatrical Mustang podcast. And I'm really excited to be here with
Jeannie Sakata.
Jeannie Sakata. Okay, good. I didn't want to mispronounce your name.
You did great.
Okay, great. And Jeannie is the writer, author, playwright of Hold These Truths, which is now showing at ACT Theater here in Seattle until August 16th.
August 16th, yes.
Great. So I saw the show and loved it. So
thank
I have like
you.
Lots and lots of questions about it. How did you come across the story of Gordon Hirabayashi?
Hirabayashi.
Gordon Hirabayashi.
Yes. I first came across Gordon's story when I saw a documentary on PBS, and it was made by a local Seattle man named John DeGraff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this wonderful documentary film where it told this amazing story that I had never heard before about Gordon. I really didn't know anything about his story, and I was really amazed that I didn't, because I was Japanese-American.
Uh-huh.
And had grown up, you know, interested in my history, my
yeah.
family history, and my community's history. And it was such a delightful story on so many different levels that I just fell in love with it, and I couldn't stop thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt compelled to find out more about Gordon as much as I could. And eventually that led to my coming to Seattle to do research at the University of Washington, where there's a wonderful collection of his letters in the
wow.
special collections. I had a job as an actor, actually, coming to Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And so in my spare time, I would go over to the university and I'd read these letters and all this other research that they have over there. And it just grew and grew and grew, my passion for the subject. And
uh-huh.
so started writing the play in late 1990s. And then in 2007, we made our world premiere, had our world premiere at East West Players.
Wow. I have so many questions now.
Sure.
I guess, so for those of people who don't know what the play is, it's about, I'm going to say it wrong again, Gordon
Hirabayashi.
Okay, I'm just going to let you say it. and his story, which is about Japanese internment camps here in the United States.
Well, actually, the play is about his legal challenge to those
okay.
camps, and also to a curfew that was aimed solely at Americans of Japanese ancestry and their parents. And Gordon actually challenged both government orders, although the Supreme Court ended up ruling on just one, which is kind of a technical thing that I don't really get into in the play. But Gordon challenged both. And I just thought it was an amazing American story that everybody
yeah.
should hear. And I emphasize American story because Gordon saw his story that way, too. I was really surprised. Like I said, I had never heard of him before. And
mm-hmm.
I should have, I felt. You know, if I had known about Rosa Parks,
yeah.
I should have known about Gordon. But he's not really in our history books. And I think that a lot of people coming to see the play have said to me, why don't we know about this man?
Yes.
I've heard
I
that question over
way.
And over. So, yeah, I'm glad you felt that way, too.
So for those people who may have slept through history, like the 2 minutes maybe that history teachers took about this, because it's not really an issue that anyone talks about. I actually was trying to describe the play to a friend of mine, and she's like, wait, that happened? Like, no one knows this occurred, especially if you didn't live on the West Coast. So what is the central motivation, I guess, in this play? Like, what is the history you're talking about?
What is the history?
Yeah, about? Like, of Japanese internment. This is not something that anyone really knows, talks about, anything. Mm-hmm. So for people listening who are like, I have no idea what they're discussing, like, what are we?
Well, I think to make a long story short, there's a term used in the play, the Issei. Mm-hmm. And that means first generation Japanese who were born in Japan and immigrated to the United States. Their children who were born in the United States are known as Nisei, second generation. And so I would be Sansei, which is third generation. Okay. So I'm actually the child of American-born parents. Mm-hmm. So Gordon's story really parallels my parents' generation. And this was a generation, because they were born in the United States, they felt that they have every right to be given all the promises of the mm-hmm. Constitution that are given to American citizens, including due process of the law.
Yeah.
And when Pearl Harbor was bombed, that really changed everything for the American-born mm-hmm. Nisei, my father's generation.
Yeah.
Even though they were loyal Americans, they felt betrayed because...
And American-born. Like, I want to... Like, that's something you hit on the play several times, and yeah. something that I think is central, is that they were born in the States. It's not like, oh, they're saying they're loyal Americans like their parents are, but are born in Japan. They are born here. They are
born
under the
America,
law.
Yeah.
Americans.
Yes, absolutely. So, to talk specifically about Gordon, when Pearl Harbor was bombed, he was a student at the University of Washington. Some things didn't change, but some things radically changed. Mm-hmm. One of those is how the Japanese-American Nisei were perceived. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, you know, they were looked at as the enemy because they had a face that looked like the enemy.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, in many communities down the coast, the teachers, friends, you know, turned against them or began to look on them with suspicion and began to look on their parents with even more suspicion because they were born in Japan. Mm-hmm. And this was really a traumatizing event for many Nisei because they considered themselves Americans mm-hmm. and loyal to this country.
Yeah.
And so when the curfew first came out that all people of Japanese ancestry, including American citizens, mm-hmm. Had to be in their homes by 8 o'clock p.m. and couldn't go out after that. Gordon was a University of Washington student, and so he was staying at YMCA where there were international students.
Yes.
And so at 5 to 8, whether he was in the coffee shop or the library, his international student friends would say, Gordy, you have to be back at the dorm in 5 minutes. Uh-huh. It's like 5 to 8. And so he said he would just pick up all his stuff and then rush back to the dorm trying to make it in time. And one night, he was rushing back, and he was running across the courtyard at the University of Washington, and he said the thought came to him that he was an American-born citizen.
Yes.
And he was running back to the dorm. Mm-hmm. And all the international students at the YMCA who weren't American citizens were still there studying. And the irony of that just hit him smack in the face. And
yeah.
he said he couldn't take one step further in going back to the dorm. Mm-hmm. He said, this isn't right. And he turned around and went back to the library mm-hmm. and decided to defy the curfew. Now, shortly after that, when the much worse orders for forced removal of the entire Japanese-American community in Seattle and down the coast mm-hmm. Came out, he was intending to go along with them.
Okay.
But as he was helping families move to Puyallup, the mm-hmm. fairgrounds where there was assembly center
okay.
where they were held until they were shipped off to the barbed wire camps.
Yeah, okay, I was just going to ask, because forced removal sounds euphemistic almost. Like, what are... We're literally talking about people basically just being kicked out, like not...
That's right.
...removed.
Well, they were forcibly removed
yeah.
by government order. That's
mm-hmm.
why I say...
Yeah.
Other words have been used, like evacuation.
Yeah.
But Gordon never liked the term evacuation because it implies a humanitarian aid you know, evacuating people from a disaster-ridden area or a war-torn area, and that's not what this was.
Well, and I think that's what I was trying to get at, too, was that this wasn't refugees or resettlement. Like, this was forcibly taking people who lived, belonged, are part of their communities, and saying that you are not one of us just because you look like someone we're fighting.
Yeah.
Even though you have no ties, no connection, nothing.
Right. So when Gordon was helping families move out to Puyallup, he had a second epiphany. How can I go through with this?
Yeah.
It's much worse than the curfew. And so he realized he had to resist. And he shocked a lot of his friends and a lot of his family, you know, who were very afraid for his safety. But he knew he couldn't go through with it. He said that once he had that realization, it became impossible for him to do it otherwise.
Yeah.
Which I thought was such a great story, because it wasn't it wasn't like he was setting out to be a hero.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he was setting out to be some well-known figure of resistance. He was just trying to follow his heart as his heart revealed certain things to him. And in that way, I thought Gordon is somebody we can all relate to.
Yeah.
You know?
As an audience member, I think that that is a perfect way to describe the play. You're not like, oh, he's going to try to take down the government, but you're on this journey with him. I see where he's coming from. Like, you have made the epiphanies that you talked about so relatable that you're like, yeah, that makes what he's doing makes sense. Everyone else around him is crazy or buying into something they shouldn't be.
The play used to have a lot more details about his college life, you know, about trying to get tuition paid and, you know, working his way to school. I used to have a lot more details about that in there because I loved those little details. I realized those things are the things which would make Gordon so relatable to all of us in the audience, you know, struggling, you know, to date girls and to, you know, just navigate his way through the things that students have to navigate their way through. We can all relate to that. And then all of a sudden he's thrust into these extraordinary circumstances where he has to make an extraordinary decision. So it's been great, and I'm glad you experienced the play that way, because it's been great to hear that other people have been too.
I think what is fantastic as an audience member is there is a person on stage who doesn't look like me, who's not the same gender that I am, who is telling a story that I get so wrapped up in and so with him that none of those things matter. I am in the story with him, and I am in what is going to happen. And I felt like that was such a beautiful experience and such a great way to experience a play, especially since it is one person.
Yes.
and we had talked about this a little bit before.
Yes.
But I wondered, how do you keep an audience's attention for 90 minutes?
Well, first of all, you have to have a fantastic actor. And Ryan Yu is amazing in the sense that he can come up with all these different accents and all these different characters and imbue them with their own distinctive qualities.
You said there's
in addition to playing Gordon,
30 different side character notes that he kind of transforms into?
Yes, I think there's 36. Somebody actually counted them. And some of them are just one line.
Yeah.
But some of those have to be very distinct personalities. So, and you need to find an actor who finds that great fun.
Yes.
And who wants to do that and who relishes that challenge. And there's a lot of great actors, you know, out there. But you have to find someone for this play that has the virtuosity to do that.
Yes.
And so Ryan is one of those actors, and he is the very first actor that ever played Gordon Hirabayashi in my play. We had our world premiere in 2007 at East West Players in Los Angeles. And the director that is directing the play up here at ACT, Jessica Kubzanski, was the original director. And I will credit Jessica as well, because not only do you have to have a great actor, you have to have a great director.
Yes.
And you have to have a director, I had to have a director, that could help the play cross the finish line, because the script wasn't quite there when we did the world premiere. I mean, it was all there, but scenes were they in the right order? Did we need this scene? Should this be cut? How could this be shaped? Mm-hmm. There was still some more work to do. And Jessica is well known for her work with new plays and new playwrights. And she just did a beautiful job sort of shepherding the script across the finish line. And I've told the story before about Jessica. She actually found the beginning of the play for me.
Really?
I was struggling and struggling to find the beginning. And there's a beautiful speech about the Quaker philosophy of lightness and darkness. Mm-hmm. And light and dark squares. Mm-hmm. And are the light squares on a black background or the black squares on a white. And it was originally at the end of the script. And she said, you know, if we move this to the beginning, then we have the whole spiritual framework of Gordon's life. Mm-hmm. And then it makes sense that he is telling his story within the context of his spiritual beliefs. Yeah. So I'll always be grateful to Jessica for finding the beginning of the play for me.
I think it's a great beginning. I think I remember kind of seeing the headshot of the actor and then seeing the person who walked out, because it starts with Gordon in his later years. And going, wait, that's not the same person. I thought this was a one-person show.
Ryan really transforms
himself. I was surprised.
When you see him off stage, when you meet him, you know, he's slender and he's kind of boyish and youthful. And when you see him on stage, his hair is slicked back and he has these glasses and he has the tweed jacket. And he just takes on the energy of a mountain to me, which Gordon had. And projects a whole different age and a whole different era. It's just a wonderful, wonderful acting accomplishment.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was fantastic. And then when he takes off all of his things and just becomes like 60 years younger.
Yeah, isn't it great?
You follow him through all of that, which I thought was fantastic.
Yeah.
That it's he can just embody all these various things to such a well-written story. I think we had talked earlier when we ate breakfast that I like jumped to my feet at the end of the play because everything was so well done, from the direction to the acting to the writing. It just felt so solid.
Oh, I'm so thrilled to hear that.
And that was it was just fantastic. I can't keep saying enough nice things. So is this your first big play that you've done?
It's my first play and my only play.
You had mentioned in one of your answers earlier.
I want to write another one and I'm working on some new ideas. But acting is really what I did primarily in my career. And it took up really all my energy and all my devotion and all my love until I discovered this story. And I so fell in love with this story. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I couldn't stop thinking about it. It became an obsession. And it was like being pregnant with an idea, and you had to have a birth of that idea or it wasn't going to let you go. That's how it felt.
Wow.
It just took over my brain. Uh-huh. And so so now I'm trying to do both. And I really love both. I love performing. I love acting. I would never want to stop. But now I've experienced how gratifying it is to choose a story to tell on stage and to write it and to present it in front of audiences and to see them respond to the story the same way I did, to find it fascinating and moving and important. And so I'm hoping to do both in the future, to keep up both.
You said that you found the story in the 90s.
Yeah.
And it didn't come to fruition until 2007. How do you believe in something that long? Like,
you know, I never had to try to believe in it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. When I said I was obsessed, like it took me over, it really did. Uh-huh. I couldn't rest until I wrote it. Mm-hmm. I literally couldn't rest until I wrote it. And I think the reason why is because it spoke to me on so many different deep levels. Mm-hmm. I think I needed to write this play for my own healing and my own family's healing, in the sense that my father was in the camps. He was a high school student when these orders came out, and so he was, you know, taken away from his life as a high school student, and all my aunts and uncles on my father's side similarly.
Yeah.
And they really lost the young lives that they had built. Mm-hmm. And similarly, Nisei students, American-born Japanese-Americans, all down the West Coast experienced the same thing. So it was a real traumatizing of a whole generation, my parents' generation. And so, you know, I grew up in a Japanese-American community, in a Japanese-American church. And so you absorb these things, even though people don't talk about them. Mm-hmm. You absorb their pain, even in if you're not actively talking about it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that I never needed to make myself write this play.
Yeah.
I had to write it for my own healing, like I said, mm-hmm. and also to learn about my own community and my own family's history and my own, and also the nation's history, my country's history. So writing this story had so many intersections of interest and of passion and of need for me. And it all came together with writing this. So,
did you always, because the title changed, it was...
Originally the title was Dawn's Light.
Uh-huh. And now it is Hold These Truths.
Yes.
What prompted that change?
Well, originally I was looking for a title that would reflect a journey of enlightenment. Mm-hmm. I loved the idea of having an image of light in the title.
Yes.
The problem is that there have been many, many, many works of art, not just written works of art, but that have the title Light. And it's really hard to find one that's original. And I came up with Dawn's Light because on several different levels I thought that would work. Mm-hmm. One is it is a play about America and about an American citizen.
Yeah.
Fighting to be accepted as a real American. And I thought of the phrase Dawn's Early Light, you know, in the National Anthem. So I thought they could echo that a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then also Gordon took this wonderful hitchhiking trip in the play, as you know, and he started that trip at dawn, he told me. And I loved the hitchhiking trip. That was maybe one of the things that convinced me, you know, this is an amazing story you could never make up. And so I loved the fact that he was starting that journey in the early morning. And also I loved the idea that there was a gradual dawning in Gordon's own consciousness that this was wrong and he couldn't go through with it. So on all those different levels, I liked that title. But I always felt that there could be a title that could be a little more dynamic in terms of reflecting what Gordon does in the play. And this was actually brought up when we did another production, a separate production, in New York. It was an off-Broadway production with the wonderful company, the Epic Theater Ensemble. And when we did the play there, it was suggested that I consider a title change because of that reason, to look for a title that actually reflected more about what Gordon does in the play. And so we were tossing out ideas, and I was tossing out words from the Declaration, the Preamble, the Constitution. And the most obvious one is We Hold These Truths. That was a little too obvious, you know. But then one of my mentors, Zach Berkman, said, what if you just said, hold these truths? And when I heard that, I said, that's it.
Yeah.
Because that's what Gordon does in the play.
I think that's beautiful.
Yes, it was beautiful on many different levels. You know, he holds on to the truths of his Quaker beliefs. And he holds on to the truths of the Constitution, the promises in the Constitution as he sees them as belonging to him, an American citizen. His tenacity through all those years was amazing.
Yes.
So I thought that's the perfect title, really. I missed the image of light a little bit, but I think it's there in the play.
And I think, too, as an audience, it just really reinforces the fact that Gordon is an American, which I think is important to the whole play. Because I think sometimes, and I can see why it would happen in the 40s, but I think as a modern audience too, we don't really get the distinction between parents who were born in Japan and people who were born in America. And I think it just really reinforces, no, he is an American citizen.
Yeah, it's a very important distinction.
Given all of the rights. And I think that from the title of the play to how he comes out and says his whole black and white Quaker philosophy, it just really reinforces from the front that you're with him and this is why he's doing what he's doing.
It's extraordinary, really, to think that Gordon, as a 24-year-old Japanese-American college student mm-hmm. in the 1940s, claimed those words in the way that he did.
Yeah.
He said, these words are mine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an American. These words are written for me. And it still amazes me, because I think so many of us take those words for granted.
Mm-hmm.
Or we think that if our rights are violated, you know, it's an amazing taking to heart of these beautiful words that happened
yeah.
to Gordon. He claimed them.
Mm-hmm.
He claimed them for his own. And when I was interviewing, he said, what I did was not a negative thing against the country. Some people see it that way. What I did, I saw it as a positive thing, because I am saying yes to my country. I'm saying yes to the Constitution. Even if the country around me at this time in my life is saying no,
uh-huh.
I am going to say yes. And I just thought that was the most beautiful thing.
I'm trying not to cry. That's beautiful. So you met Gordon.
Yes, I interviewed him quite extensively for this play. And so I really cherish the time I spent with him, because he died a couple of years ago. And shortly after that, President Obama awarded him posthumously the Medal of Freedom.
Were you able to go to that?
No, that was really, you know, just for an intimate gathering. His mm-hmm. family was there. His wife, Susan Carnahan, accepted the medal for him. But I heard all about it, and so I felt like I was there.
Yeah. I think you also said before, like, Rosa Parks, like, now that I've heard Gordon's story, I'm like, yeah, why is he not at the same level? Why is he not someone who's like, I claim I'm an American, I'm going to hold these truths?
I would love for students to know about Gordon, because he was a student when he took this stand.
Mm-hmm.
And also because, you know, as we've discussed, it's not that he was somebody who was out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
He was just a student going to college,
mm-hmm.
doing things that college students do and worrying about things that college students worry about.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love for young people to know about this gradual journey
mm-hmm.
that, you know, we all can take. You know, maybe we will not do in our lifetime something like Gordon did.
Yeah.
But we can all take those small steps towards being a little bit more courageous
mm-hmm.
or a little bit more claiming of mm-hmm. what should be ours as Americans.
I think that was a beautiful part of the play, too, is that he never takes these really big, gigantic hero steps. He just always takes these very tiny, minute, no, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah,
or
it's
this
gradual.
Yeah. And then by 3/4 of the play, he's at the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And you're like, how did we end up here? Like, this is awesome, but wait. Like, it just never felt like, and we're taking it to the Supreme Court. It just, like you said, feels like...
It unfolds.
Yeah.
I think is a lovely word for Gordon's story and how he explained his own journey of enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
It just unfolded. He said that, you know, there was so much anxiety in the air at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was trying to figure out, what are they going to do to us? What should we be doing? Where,
mm-hmm.
when the orders came out, what's going to happen to us? Where are we going?
Yeah.
They had no idea where they were going. They're packing up their belongings. They're selling things. They're selling their businesses. They have no idea where they're going. And there was such anxiety in the air. And I think that Gordon was saying, you know, none of this was set in stone for him. He
mm-hmm.
was just trying to find his way through the murkiness,
mm-hmm.
trying to decide what to do so that he could hold true to himself.
Yeah.
And it was a constantly changing situation and full
mm-hmm.
of anxiety. So it's just a great story for us to take heart from,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, none of us are perfect. None of us can see the future. None of us can assess things as brilliantly as we'd like in the moment that things happen. You know, but we can take those steps,
yeah.
as he did.
You said that you were also meeting with his family.
Yes, they're coming to see the show today. His daughter.
Have they seen it? Did Gordon get to
yes,
see it?
Yes, actually, there have been 3 presentations here in Seattle of the play. 2 last year.
Mm-hmm.
One with an actor, Greg Watanabe, from Los Angeles. Another wonderful actor. He did a staged reading of Hold These Truths for the University of Washington symposium on Gordon called Courage in Action. And this is when Gordon's family came to the university, and there was a weekend symposium about Gordon, and his wife Susan donated his papers to the University of Washington archives. And so we capped off the weekend with mm-hmm. the stage screening of the play at Theater off Jackson in the International District. And then last year at ACT in the Central Heating Lab, we did four performances of Hold These Truths with another actor, the wonderful Joel De La Fuente, who's from New York, and who did the off-Broadway production in New York in 2012, directed by Lisa Rothy. And these are all fantastic artists. I've just been so lucky to get to work with them all. And so this year, the main stage production that's going on now is actually the third actor. It features the third actor to play Gordon in the last year here in Seattle, which is Ryan Yu, directed by Jessica Kapczanski. And Ryan and Jessica are the original team from Los Angeles.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, who originated the play in 2007 at East West Players. So it's just been a wonderful river of artists that I've gotten to work with in the past years. And there were actually two other productions earlier this year, one in Philadelphia, directed by Daniel Student with Makoto Hirano playing Gordon, and then in Palm Springs there was another production directed by Ron Salona featuring Blake Cushy. So there have been, in the past year, five different actors playing Gordon.
Wow. That's got to just feel amazing to have like held this thing and had it been your baby for so long, and then just to see it just not explode, but like gain the momentum it has.
Yeah, it's been really amazing. And what means a lot to me is that every actor that has played Gordon has found it an amazing experience and personally meaningful to them. And also there's another dimension to this in that I feel really proud to have written a play where an Asian American actor can really show what they're capable of.
Yes.
Because lots of times in our business, you know, historically, we've been quite limited in what we've been able to do, Asian American actors and actresses. And so the actor that does Hold These Truths gets a chance to just show the whole gamut of what they're capable of.
I mean, from accents to the physicality. There's so much going on in that 90 minutes.
Yeah. But it's been really great, you know, to have these actors tell me, oh my God, this is like the best challenge I've ever had as an actor. And, you know, they're so grateful for the chance to play Gordon, who's so inspiring to each of them. So that's been really fantastic, you know, on that level.
Yeah. What has it meant for you with audience, like, reactions? Like, how has that really shaped how you see the play, its significance, that sort of thing?
The really wonderful thing, and I think something that Gordon would have been very pleased about himself, is that we started as an Asian American theater. So we started at East West Players in 2007. But every theater that has done the show after that, or has hosted us, has not really been an Asian American theater.
Yeah.
You know, we've been to, let's see, Epic Theater Ensemble in New York, and Playmakers Rep in North Carolina, Terra Nova Collective in New York, and then here at ACT, Silk Road Rising in Chicago, which does do a lot of Asian American works. But that has told me that the audience for this is far beyond Asian Americans. And it tells me that people are seeing this as a deeply important American story. And the feedback that we've gotten from audiences of all different ethnicities and ages has told me that too. So I know Gordon would have been very pleased by that. That's how he saw his story. So we'll hope that continues.
I mean, it was fantastic. I remember thinking the audience that I saw it with was probably a bit older and mostly white, I think, and thinking about how we as an audience were with him, and him telling a story that is so important that normally wouldn't get that kind of exposure, but it's so well written and it's so important that I think everyone left thinking like, oh my goodness, everyone I know has to see this. And I think that is a true credit to you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
That it can cross all of those things that we sometimes get hung up with and be such an important story and such a, I don't know, moving piece. So thank you
thank
as an audience
you so
member.
Much.
I don't know what
so
to say.
Deeply
I'm just
appreciated.
Like...
After 10 years of working on the play, it's like, oh, thank you, thank you,
I will
thank
keep
you.
Saying nice things. I mean, I so thoroughly enjoyed it. And I so, I mean, both me and my friend who went to see it just walked away thinking, we're so glad we spent the last 90 minutes with him, with this story. So thank you.
Please tell all your friends.
I think this is a good place to end it, unless you have anything else you want to say.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much for this talk.
Yeah.
I so enjoyed it.
I'm buzzing, so thanks.